Hello. Chris?
Hello, everyone.
You can hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah, slight problems with the audio while joining, but now everything seems to be working. I see people are still joining, so we'll give everybody another minute or so, and then we'll get going.
Hi, Chris.
Morning.
Morning.
Hi, Dimi. Good evening.
So give everybody about one more minute.
Ido? אם תיקח אותך ב-740, טוב? 740.
Okay, so let's get started. We have a busy agenda today. The first item is pretty fast, a white paper dot release. Then we're going to have an update on the Tiger team and the architecture diagram for Beijing, certificate and secret management from Srini. Huabing is going to do the MSB, and then Bharath is going to share with us his chat proposal. To kick it off, just a very quick item. Since the release, there have been some comments on the white paper, and I spoke with the Linux Foundation. They are going to put out a dot release in time for the developer summit in a couple of weeks. What this means is that, you know, just like a maintenance release for the code, it's designed for obvious bugs. So if there are comments, we've collected some already. If anyone else has additional email comments on the white paper, please send them in to the ARC list by Friday. That's December 1st. We will put together a draft and circulate it early next week, depending on exactly how many comments. Probably Monday or Tuesday. And then we'd like final comments by next Wednesday. And then we'll have it finalized by the end of the week to publish in time for the developer summit. Any questions or comments on that? Okay. Great. So let's move along. Is Parviz on the call?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So let me turn this over to you next. We'd like an update on the Tiger team activities and where you are with the architecture diagram for Beijing.
Sure. Let me find my slides first.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me probably just a second here.
Harvis, is this version uploaded?
Yeah. It's on the contribution page.
Great.
Hey, Chris, just while we're waiting, where's the white paper? Where can we find the draft?
It's been published externally. I tell you what, I'll send it around through email following this call.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, could you release the right, Chris?
Yes, sorry, Parviz. Here we go.
That's okay.
There you go.
Okay, can you see my screen?
Not yet.
Oh, no.
It doesn't look like you're sharing. There it goes. Okay, now
okay.
We see it.
Okay, so I moved to the release 2, of course, R2 plus architecture. So we did have a very interesting meeting last time. I'm hearing some echo. Hello. Okay. So I can go and show you some of the comments that I received. As you can see on this picture, there are some redraw of some of the components on top of all the changes that I made. Actually, Vimal and the call Vimal also helped. Thanks, Vimal, to address some of the comments. As you can see on the top, we added some those blue boxes, OSS, PSS, CLI, and ONAP portal. There is an external gateway, I don't recall, but Vimal can probably explain
so,
that.
So Parviz, the comment we got was, A, extend the ONAP API to cover both the runtime and design time, because there could be APIs that could be used to access log information and other information. Number two was that those APIs could be used by all the number of different consumers, like on a portal, command line interface, OSS, PSS, and for external interfaces that could come through a gateway. Each company might have a gateway for different people to come, and then they will direct that those APIs from ONAP. ONAP API layer is common across, and then there are a lot of consumers of those APIs.
Okay. All right, thank you. We are going to address this external gateway showing on this picture during the Tiger team discussion. But if there is no objection, we keep it the way it is. We moved the ONAP operations manager on the right, Chris, you see as a vertical box. It was used to be on the top. Now that is on the showing on the right. There was a comment on that. But as you can see, the vertical box only goes all the way to the change management design. It should not cover the design, test, and certification. That was the comment I received during the call, the Tiger team call. I hope that is accurate. So I didn't draw this all the way down, okay? There is the geometry. Has a bunch of comments that we should not really use the acronym on this high-level view of the architecture. So we removed most of the acronyms, as you can see, as part of the common services.
We don't have AA yet. We spelled it out, Application Authorization Framework. We don't have the OOF, so it's ONAP Optimization Framework, logging the same, and Common Controller SDK. We also had something for the future of components that we add to the common services. The policy framework is the same. The DCAE is gone. Now it's data collection, analytic, and event. And also there is an event correlation that's added. The ANAI is now active and available inventory and external registry. There is no acronym here. For the orchestration, I explained that in the next slide exactly what we did there. But right now it's just shown as a single box called orchestration. Then there is a tricky part here in the middle for microservices bus and data movement. By the way, data movement, according to Jamil's suggestion, that is, we spelled out a DMAP, and now it's called data movement. But there was comment from, I believe it was Ling Li or someone from VFC team. You see a note, I call it note one. And it can, if you go to the lower part of the picture on the left, the note one, it says not all components use DMAP, for example, NFVO. So NFVO, which is a part of this orchestration function, it doesn't use DMAP. So in this case, the data movement for NFVO is limited to microservices bus, okay?
I think data movement is only a part of DMAP. Actually, in DMAP, there are two functionality. First one is the async message, the second one is data movement. So I think we should put DMAP here instead of data movement, because it only.
But
only
I think rather than doing that, maybe it's even better to start saying that this is really a way of career. It's really an interconnector, a backplane for microservices. There may be different functions involved in that, and pub sub events versus data channels versus, you know, all sorts of other stuff might be the case. But in general, what we're really doing is kind of saying, look, in the middle of all these things, there's a microservice backplane into which you plug in microservices. And whatever you need to support that is part of that middle blob, right? And that could be the kind of the spinal cord of the entire system, right?
Okay, so it sounds like we still need a little bit more work on that. So we'll just refer that back to the Tiger team for continued.
Yeah.
Two things, Pavis. One small thing with this, the latest change since the Tiger team there. We have external gateway and OSS BSS kind of represented in the same way as CLI and ONAP portal. Now, external gateway and OSS BSS is outside the scope of ONAP, really, right? And CLI and ONAP portal are inside the scope. But with the color coding, it looks the same. So maybe we need to sort of differentiate that in, you know,
that's a good
blanket.
There's also something else, a part is that we'll add it in the next meeting. But I presume by the external gateway, you mean like maybe something like API gateways or things of that nature that know how to transcode between the ONAP API and other external APIs?
Alex, you remember that we had the discussion on external API in the past?
Yes.
Now, the part of API on that orange box is already captured.
Yes.
For the ONAP to interact with the external components, not necessarily from the ONAP platform. So there was a comment, I believe that, I recall, that we need to use a gateway to allow that interaction happen.
Yes, but I think we can be more specific. For example, if I want to connect an SNMP system to an ONAP box, that would require some sort of a gateway that knows how to speak SNMP to ONAP API and vice versa.
Okay. So that's an example you're saying.
Yeah, and that would clarify it, because the kind of interactions we would see through OSS BSS versus CLIs versus GUIs would be very different from that, but that type of gateway is essential.
Okay, sure. I'll add that as a note, that external gateway, an example would be SNMP, not necessarily any random component externally can use that gateway to interact with ONA. Okay.
The version that's on the contributions was from November the 14th. This is more recent than that, so that was a little bit. Can you make sure you upload this as well?
Okay. Let's continue on the other changes I made.
Hello. I just muted myself. May I have one comment here? So.
Yeah,
actually, MSP has a internal edge gateway. So the internal gateway here is a reference to some project or internal system or part of the ONAP now, because now MSP have the internal edge gateway, which can be used to expose all the HI inside ONAP to the external system.
Yeah, microservices bus and the gateway associated with that is not a part of the external gateway, Harbin, correct?
Well, I think there's some refactoring that will need to happen if we truly want to make the system look this way. But Waibing is right. There is an API gateway built into the MSB that could potentially be in part used to do the external gateway function. Just how you
use it. We can talk in the Tiger team, but I thought the Orange box we have ONAP API is that function, and that is consumed by these external gateway OSS BSS.
Yes, so that's why I said refactoring is required. So we need to discuss that.
Okay,
we can send that back to the Tiger team. Okay.
Maybe we can discuss more detail in the Tiger team.
Yeah. Okay,
one question. I see adoption layer in generic VNF controller and multi-cloud adoption, but I don't see adoption layer in STN controller. Is it deliberate?
Hold on. There was a comment from Pierre or someone that we should be consistent in the use of adaptation layer. Well, I thought that with the STN controller, that is implicitly when you have the downstream controller, like third-party controller, you have that interaction already embedded into the controller. If you want to show it, last night I was thinking about showing it. Is that a preference to show it or not?
Well, so let's discuss it, because we haven't really had much discussion on the microservices side yet, in part because I was kind of hoping Waibing would free up. Now that he is, then we can start having the discussion around all the other next level of detail on what it actually means to have a third-party controller, and why is it not just another component, and what is that?
Okay.
One of the things we discussed before, right, we need to kind of revisit with the MSB folks involved now.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I guess, let's have that discussion in the Tiger team.
Yeah.
I thought that we captured the comments from last time. We can add the adaptation layer to the SDN controller box as well. But let's wait for the Tiger team to finalize that.
And the second question, in the generic VNF controller, you are not showing VNF configuration item there, but you are showing only the external element management system.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point.
Does it mean that in R2 are we thinking of only having external EMS, not any VNF configuration within AppSync.
Well, okay. It's not that everybody has to go through EMS. It's those are the, you know, is what, yeah. I think don't overinterpret this one, because there could be directed, that's additional, there could be to talk directly using NetConf, Yang, Ceph, or use VNF Manager, or use Element Manager.
But I think the point, Vimal, that I think is valid, actually, is that it talks about lifecycle management, but it doesn't talk about app configuration.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would look at lifecycle management as, you know, that it includes the config management as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should.
Okay, that's one interpretation, but then, okay. Then we need to be clear about the definition of that, because, I mean...
Well, we need definitions for everything. We know that, right? So that's part of the target.
If you take a little bit sort of what's often discussed, LCM refers more to the Etsy Manoscope.
Okay. So guys, there are two aspects. I explained that last time. The red box is more for the vendor-specific VNFM, the red box for a specific VNF manager. I don't have the acronym here, and the EMS. And then for the generic VNFM, that's already captured in the gray box in the middle, yeah? So the lifecycle management, we can basically embed that into the configuration management as part of that, or we can spell that out. But that is the detail that when we add text and the list of function, I believe that for VNFC, I have a separate slide, if you can wait. I have a separate slide for that. But on the picture, it's going to be really cluttered if I show all those components. But at least so lifecycle management is shown on the gray box, the bigger box on generic VNF controller. And then the green, the red boxes, this is all together, the specific VNF manager and element management system. That doesn't go through the generic VNF controller. That directly interacts with the NFVO, as I explained last time.
I think if we bring the orchestration into instantiation assurance and something else.
Who is talking? I cannot hear you.
This is Alex. If we
Alex, you're fading. Yes. Okay.
Sorry, I'm wrong microphone.
Now you're good.
I think if we partition orchestration into instantiation or fulfillment assurance and billing or metering or whatever, then some of these questions will fall into place, right? Because they kind of naturally create those configuration change management flows and everything else. And then you can use the controllers as just the plugins to execute on those orchestration steps.
Okay, Alex, thanks for that. Let's move on. Because in the Tiger team, between now and the Friday, you need to be more active on the email list. We cannot just do all the changes on the fly. But this is what we agreed last time. If there's something missing, we can add text to explain that, because this picture is already quite cluttered and busy. Now, there was a comment on the network function layer. It was attached to the hypervisor and OS layer, so I separated that. That was a good comment. Now these are separate because they are separate functions. There was a comment on the VNF, PNF, SDK. On this page, since there is no mention of the projects, I reworded as VNF, PNF onboarding. But then the next diagram shows the project names, okay? For multi-cloud, we didn't make any changes except that the infrastructure adaptation layer, someone said that we need to clarify what exactly that would do, okay? So we are hoping that RAMKey, there is a placeholder for RAMKey to provide more details on the multi-cloud and the mediation layer. In that project, I guess the interaction between the design time runtime that is already there, we didn't add anything there. I removed the CLAMP, the acronym from the design time list of functions. If there is no question, I I move to the next slide. This is what I created based on the discussion. So this is the one, as you can see, it shows now the acronyms. There is probably nothing new here. There is on the loop between the design time and runtime, I put clamp there. I believe that that was the discussion in the past, that all this interaction, the engineering rule policy distribution, blah, blah, for closed loop operation, the clamp project would have the scope for accomplishing that. We have the ANAI and, of course, ESR. We have the VFC. By the way, this is the way that I showed the NFPO, SO slash NFPO, and then I put the hierarchical nature of the interaction. Then I put a VFC next to the NFPO to signify the fact that VFC in this picture, as part of the project, it has two components. One component is in the orchestration layer, which is NFPO. The second component is in the adaptation layer for the generic VNF controller. And then I put a C node 2. In the node 2, we need to make a decision at the next stage whether NFPO and generic VNF manager are separate projects or not. This is a discussion we are going to have with the PTL, Chris. That discussion is going to happen soon, yeah? So that node serves that purpose. If in ONAP release 2 and the future releases, do we want to combine those two projects into one, as in release 1, or we keep them separate projects? And we don't know the answer yet. We need to talk to the PTL. Okay. What else? Pretty much everything else is in place. Instead of using the generic textual description, we have the acronyms. Okay. I don't see any other changes except the same comments that I received on the previous. Okay.
Yes, Jamil, there was a change proposed by Susanna. It's to limit the cloud infrastructure to only VNF. Because here we have that the VNF are over the cloud infrastructure.
Yes, but
that's a good point. We have to show PNFs anyway, yeah? I limit this box here to VNFs and then keep the PNFs out, yeah?
No. Yeah. You could just move the bottom gray more to the right, the hypervisor OS.
Yeah.
This is going to be
limited like that.
Something like that. So I'll make this.
And also, to keep the same terminology in the architecture for release 1 for public cloud and to avoid VMware, Azure, but anyways, we can discuss.
Which one is in, which one is out? This discussion already happened. Chris, you already captured this in R1, correct? The hypervisor OS layer?
We made it fuzzier. We basically included what was in, and then we said public cloud instead. So I can work with you on that.
Yeah. You are right, Jamil.
Just saying that, you know, we all know that, you know, ideally we would not have any PNFs, but that's not the reality if we consider 5G edge. So
no, there are PNFs. Alex, don't mistake that the PNF covering the cloud infrastructure. They are separate physical boxes. They are not, they have nothing to do with the cloud infrastructure. That's the point.
Yeah, Patrick, okay. I agree that PNF need to be there. Also, when we talk about PNF, I noticed that on the SDN controller, you have L0. Is that even lower than PNF? Am I correct? When you talk L0, we talk about shell, gabling, energy management.
Okay, if you have any point to reflect that on this picture, please send email to the Tiger list, okay? The Tiger team has the list. If you are nothing a part of that, please send me a request. I can add you. Please send that comment to the Tiger list. So this is pretty much, Chris, on the architecture diagram. then we have a list of functions. This is the detailed view. After we fix the first two slides, I reflect that on the detailed view. There is nothing new here. Let me go to that set of functions. Mapping, you added a list of functions for VFC, generic VNFM. So for generic VNFM, part of VFC, the list of functions are already in the bottom part of this picture. Okay. I believe that there was no objection to this list. Okay. There is one question on the NFVO and the generic VNF manager, which is the use of the etc/NFV spec OR-VNFM. So when it comes to Orchestration Federation, we are going to come back to this and see if the NFU is going to talk to the SO, and that interface is not shown here. So the Orchestration Federation interface between NFU and SO needs to be added. I was thinking about this last night. I believe that in the Tiger Team discussion, we are going to come back to this issue. This is only showing the NFU and below, all the layer below that, okay? So the other thing that is, if Andy is here, we are going to, in the Tiger Team, we're going to take this external API function requirement to the next level. I have some ideas, so we need to have that discussion in the Tiger Team. Chris?
Yeah, no, you have some updated slides, so I'll get those to you.
Okay. Yeah, because one of the comments there was this was only handling the MEF part. We need to sort of have the actual external API definition as such, right?
Right. So we're extending the whole series of slides.
Yeah. To include that. Yeah. Steve, and Andy, we are mentioning MEF interlude, and then I was looking at the intra carrier case. They talk about another interface called Legato. We can talk about that during the...
So I have new slides that will set the whole context.
Great. Yeah, but then, Chris, for your ARC subcommittee decision, we need to really move fast to see if we want to leverage on the MEF kind of service management architecture plus the TMF forum API.
Right, so we actually have joint effort going on with MEF right now around Legato, and TM Forms coming on board for the API definition around that.
Yeah, but there's a bigger question for the ARC subcommittee. Is that a community decision that we are going to leverage on MEF and TM Forum APIs for release 2 and beyond? That decision is pending, or that decision has been made? Chris,
This is with respect to the external view of the APIs, right? And we need to have a decision, we need to have a discussion as to how well we propagate those APIs into the individual elements within the architecture.
But those, I think the point is also that we actually have to officially acknowledge that the pattern is going to be based on some specific kind of higher level meta architectures, right? Because MEF and TMF sort of make certain assumptions about how things are talking to each other and how they're represented and the layering and all that. So we got to pick one, right? Or two, and just assert that that's what we're doing. And we haven't
right, formed. So I have new slides coming that I'll talk about that from the external perspective.
Okay. Chris, can you give me 1 minute to show a slide to clarify my point here?
Sure.
Do I have 1 minute? Okay, this is probably something that the TSC vote is needed, or Chris, you can speak up. The use of the MEF and the TM Forum APIs, is that decision is pending, or the Tiger Team can go ahead and assume that that decision has been already made?
It's still a work in progress, particularly with TM Forum. We're still waiting on some of the paperwork to go through because not everybody who's on this call has access to the TM Forum documents until we get that straightened away. I think we should be talking about it. I think, you know, within the Tiger Team, absolutely bring it up. And then we can talk about it within the context of the greater architecture. You'll be aware, the MEF agreements have been signed. TM Forum is probably a couple more weeks out. But I think that it's definitely worth talking about. And then we'll make a decision as soon as is appropriate.
Okay.
But equally, we shouldn't be excluding others as well, right? I mean, you can also see a role for the OSMA NFEO interface as well.
Sure.
So I guess it's not no reason for conceptually to exclude certain things. Then, of course, there's a business question about when they actually make sense to bring in, which is another question.
Right.
Okay.
For sure.
There are other aspects too. As you can see, this is just for the next 30 seconds, Chris and the team. As you can see, there is a full suite of other interfaces. I guess Andy is going to probably give us the more details. But I circle around those two. You see the east-west between the two, an operator and the partner, and also north-south between within the same SP domain. Then you have the north-south interaction based on how do you say legato. So the question is, do we pick and choose from the APIs that are defined and the architecture that you see on this figure, on this diagram? Do we need to pick and choose the most relevant ones? In this picture, you see Legato for intra-carrier and Interlude for the inter-carrier case. So, yeah, we need to have a green signal from Chris and your TSC decision that we want to really go deep into this. Chris, I need you.
You can go the other way too. Talk about it within the Tiger team, you're welcome to bring a proposal to the table. An explanation for people who aren't familiar with these. About the interfaces and how they'd be used, and if it's cross-project and affects more than one component, let's talk about it here, we'll see where the discussion takes us. Don't necessarily wait on some of the paperwork and some of the more administrative
stuff.
If you can put together a proposal, do so. It doesn't have to be limited to MEF or TM Forum, as Stephen was mentioning, and then bring it back, and we'll take the discussion where it goes.
Okay, sure. Andy, I'll share this slide with you. I'm sure you have your.
No, I wrote that slide. I wrote the slide, so I understand. I actually have a whole set of slides just around this particular topic, and okay. I'll share those with you soon.
This is from the MEF 55, beyond that.
Respect. Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Chris, I guess we have still one more update before the face-to-face meeting. This Friday, we have a Tiger Team meeting, and I managed to cement that time slot from now onward based on the doodle pool. We have that Friday time slot for weekly Tiger Team meeting. Okay, Chris, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Parviz.
Can I ask a question? Still, it's a general question on this Parviz and team. We have a nice new diagram now. Definitely looks nicer and better and more functional, more how we want ONAP to look like than R1. Question is, do we have any idea how we move from where we are now to this? Because we're saying R2, which is suggesting that we believe that by Beijing we will be in this architecture. My concern is, there are people out there who look at our stuff and write sometimes not very nice things. I wonder if this will, pass the reality test.
Yeah. You remember, is this Avi who is speaking?
No, this is Yoav.
Yeah, okay. Look at this page here. Can you see the screen now?
Yeah.
You see that this thing here, we need to bring this to the plane of reality. I totally agree with you.
And at least the Tiger team is going to definitely have, either at the architecture subcommittee level or at the Tiger team. Chris, this is something that we need to get direction from the ARC, okay?
Yeah.
Just a quick comment on this. I don't think we can approve the R2 plus architecture. I think we're going to, we still need to go to the next level of detail and talk about some topics that we haven't broached at all. But it's good to have some alignment at the high level until at least across functional blocks, right? The next level of detail to me would include more unification around microservice patterns, security, other things we do cross-functionally that are cross-cutting concerns, right, that don't apply to any one functional box. I don't think we covered a lot of those. And that's
we are not done yet. Alex, right. I'm directly responding to the previous comment. The question is, R1 is here, it's the release and the running code. R2 is coming. The reality is that there is a significant gap between the architecture we are envisioning from R2 and the code, that running code for R1. So we need to have that discussion anyway with the PTL, okay?
And I'd like
Alex, you're right.
I'd like to clarify just a little further that there are probably two views here. There's the long-term view, which is the target we're aiming for. And then we're going to have to make some concrete steps in R2, which won't get us all the way there, but it should make progress in that direction. And then that particular view, the R2 only view, we'll have to finalize by the M2 date and then bring back to the TSC for formal review. But we do want to get this long-term view out in front of the projects early, while everybody's still in their project planning, so that we can get movement in this direction, from the various projects, from the proposals that are coming in, that when we review it in Santa Clara in a couple of weeks, we will have something to help guide those discussions. So
maybe to avoid some nasty comments that might be made, maybe we want to call it, rather than R2 plus architecture, maybe target architecture?
Sure. That might be a good way to do it. Call it the target, and then we can have the R2 architecture, which is the more specific steps as those get finalized.
I just add a couple of words in here? I've just been listening to this. So number one is, I think target architecture is good. M2 is where the TSC approved the R2 architecture. That's what M2 is. In terms of how do you go from this target architecture to implementation, in the Santa Clara meeting, there's going to be a discussion by some of you guys and Jason Hunt on the software architecture. And the idea of the software architecture is to put a plan together of how do you go from a target architecture to really what the PTLs end up implementing. You guys obviously have to be all aligned towards the software architecture. We don't want to be talking to each PTL separately and telling them something different. Just wanted to add that. You guys are on the same line in here, but Santa Clara, we're going to define how do you go from a target architecture the software architecture where you can go to talk to the PTL.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Mazin, are you saying that the discussion with the PTL should be like a three-way discussion? Is that your point?
No,
I didn't say that. I said that what you guys have is a target architecture. TSC has to approve a target architecture. But then there needs to be a committee that could be, for the proposals in Santa Clara, it could be a subset of this committee, it could be a separate committee, it could be just a coordinator. That is the proposal that's going to be in Santa Clara coming from you guys, is to decide how do you go from a target architecture to a software architecture, okay?
Sure.
The PTLs are hearing the same message and not hearing different things from different people.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Chris?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'm done.
Thank you, Parviz. I appreciate the update. And to the Tiger team, you know, thank you for your work. It's clear there's been a lot of good discussion happening, and I appreciate everybody's comments on this and trying to update and improve the target for long term. So good work, and look forward to hearing the next update. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Certificate and secret management, Srini.
Oh, okay. Let me share my screen. Give me a second, please.
Just by way of introduction, Chris, when while Srini is bringing this up, I just want to inform that these have been through the security subcommittee and identified they meet exist needed functionality. But the one thing that has to be sort of worked through is the relation to AAF.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, that's a good state. So at this time, we are proposing it as a independent project, but based on feedback that we receive from AAF team, we need to see whether it needs to be merged there. But anyway, so thanks for that. So, thanks for that. So, hello.
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, there is some echo. Let's see.
There, I think we found it. Keep going. I'll manage participants. If I get any more echo, I'll try to mute those lines.
Okay. This project is about security, making sure that the ONAP is securely can be installed and then used. At this time, there are two services which we are proposing here. One is certificate provisioning service, and the second one is secret management service. And it is needed for secure communication among services or microservices within ONAP, whether they are in the same location or across multiple geographical locations. At this time, both Intel and Tech Mahindra committed a few resources to take this project forward. Some background, ONAP today has, lots of services today, almost 50 plus. And in R2, we are also thinking of having redundancy. So each service might be instantiated at least the minimum 3 times. So there could be, 150 plus service instances in total. And then we're also thinking about having some external services and some ONAP services themselves being placed in edge clouds, things like that. So there is a need for, secure communication among the services. Unfortunately, almost all services, they talk over TCP, whether it is REST API-based or this DMAP, Kafka published subscriber-based communication. They're all TCP-based. So we think that TLS 1.2 secure communication is good enough, and there is no need for any other secure communication such as IPsec. Again, the main need really is that we don't want any bad actors stealing the data on the wires, and also we don't want any bad actors to send messages to the ONAP services. And hence, there is a need for secure communication with certificate-based authentication is a proposal here. And same is the case with DMAP. Use TLS 1.2 between brokers and publish and subscribers. But the end-to-end encryption is out of scope for now. That is between publisher and subscriber. There is no end-to-end encryption, but at least with the broker, there is secure communication with the broker.
Do you see this also being applicable to the external APIs?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe I mean, with additional requirements.
Right, I think, I mean, one is the certificate. He also has another proposal where you need to, I mean, there's different sorts of, sorry, this is Stephen from the, I mean, what we've discussed in the security subcommittee there, I mean, we have credentials that are necessary for the external APIs, credentials that are necessary for the external communication, and then you've also got to store things for the communication where you connect externally there. And then we can discuss whether this proposal is the one, I mean, we need to store the credentials for the external communication as well, which may be separate to the ones used internally.
Yes. So, yeah, that's right, Steve. So this particular proposal is mainly to enable secure communication among ONAP ONAP services. But for external communication, I guess the certificates need to be at this time manually kind of need to be enrolled using maybe some third party or maybe public CS. So that is not addressed yet. It is mainly for intercommunication.
Okay, so perhaps we want to start working on that as part of our engineering work for Beijing is looking at the security mechanism for the external.
Yeah, that might be a little easier, and maybe it's already some subcode may be available already today. But yeah, we need to figure out if there are any gaps there. Okay.
Thank you.
So this is a kind of a primer. Whenever you have two different services need to communicate securely, since these are headless systems, there is no username and password kind of authentication should be there. So both sides, you need to have certificates to authenticate with each other. And this picture is showing what normally people use already in the industry. Essentially, you require both sides having their own certificate and corresponding private key. And then you also should have a CA certificate to authenticate peers. So that is a normal requirement. But what is challenging really is that, how do you basically ensure that these certificates are provisioned, automatically with no human intervention? And typically people use CA, Certificate Authority Service. And that's what really we are proposing here. So this is, the common method used in industry. In microservices world, you have, service, whatever service you have, when it comes up, it generates, some key pair, public key pair, RFC or DCD is a public key pair. And then generates certificate request and sends it over to local internal CA. And the CA basically signs, verifies that request and then creates, certificate and sends it using its CA and sends it back to service. So that's how service basically is provisioned with certificates. Once it has a certificate, then it can use that, as part of the mutual TLS, secure communication with other services. So this is a typical method used.
Would you use this to apply to VNFs as well? So in other words, would you make that internal CA available to VNF providers or to VNF SDK for digital signing of the VNFs?
For VNF images, I think it is a different methodology, right? That is, VNF images need to be signed by the vendor CA, right? Vendor would sign it, and then it, at the time of onboarding, somebody has to verify. So you just require the public key of the signing key. So that's a different methodology. It's not meant for this.
But VNF component to VNF component to communication, how do you see that?
It's outside this.
Okay, VNF to VNF, at runtime, VNF to VNF. Yeah, you could use this CA for that purpose also. That's why we are also proposing the CA software which we develop as part of this project need to have multiple CA instances. So we could have one CA instance for internal ONAP service communication purposes, and another CA instance for something else like VNF to VNF. So we want to make it, kind of a multi-instance-based service.
But the VNFs get a bit tricky as well, because I have other, it's like the external sort of APIs, I have other, let's say, requirements, or might have other sort of, particularly when you come into operator scenarios and so on.
I meant management interfaces that VNFs might exploit.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that extends the trust all the way to...
Yep.
The final yeah. link of trust is to the VNF management API, and then you're done.
Hold on that until the end of the presentation, where you also get the Secret Service store as well.
Yeah. But that's Alex. That is possible. So there is nothing. This particular, even though this picture is showing, and I am also talking about ONAP services in general. But you are right. VES agent. In VNF will communicate with the DCAAE. So yeah, you could use certificate-based authentication between the best client agent and DCAAE using this internal CA. So it's possible. So okay. So based on what we see, we put some set of requirements. Maybe I'll go to the next slide to show it tutorially. So essentially what we are suggesting is that as part of this project, all the blue items need to be developed. There is internal CA service, which depends on, we are proposing the HashiCorp Vault project, which is already has CA functionality, but we intend to create some credential management broker service on top of it to allow either people to use Vault PKI, or if some ONAP deployers feel that they're comfortable with some other CA service, they could also create plugin to talk to external CA service. But as far as the internal ONAP service are concerned, they always communicate with certificate management broker service. And the internally, whether how they talk with PKI, HashiCorp PKI, or external CA is basically kind of transparent to services, ONAP services. So in the ONAP service side, typically today you have this existing ONAP service logic, using HTTP kind of transport. But the enhancements required is that, they need to include the certificate client agent provided by the project. And they need to enable Java Sun PKCS11 provider, which is part of Java already, and include soft HSM version 2. This is also open source. And our intention is to add some hardware security plugins to keep the private key secure. And similarly, we also need to keep the CA private key secure. There may be some, we need to add some plugin to HashiCorp Vault. So that's the kind of high level architecture blocks.
Can I question? Is it this CA is intended to generate a self-signed certificate for ONAP internal, or is going to be used in runtime? Instead of the HTTP handshake will go up to the internal CA and validate the incoming request, which that if it's come from an authoritative source, is it a build time integration or a runtime integration?
Okay, so the CA, when it is brought up first time, I guess the admin has to go and create. Ask the CA to create self-signed CA certificate. That is one-time activity. But later on, whenever ONAP service is brought up, at any time of that ONAP service, it has to go and it has to basically create the public key pair here and get the certificate enrolled using internal CA. So once that happens, that certificate enrollment happens, every time service instance comes up, first time, right? And if it is restarted again, it is going to get new certificate enrolled. And then once that certificate is enrolled, that certificate would be used by this service to make mutual TLS communication with other services. So it's only the CA certificate is created one time when the CA service CA service is deployed, and as far as the each service certificate enrollment is concerned, that happens every time that service is started. But once that certificate is enrolled, you could have any number of TLS connections with other services. There is no CA involvement comes into picture. Does it answer your question? Okay. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Okay. So this I already talked about what is the enhancements required in existing ONAP services. Essentially, we need to build with some additional software packages in the while creating that container service, container image. And each service, when it comes up, as part of the initialization, it has to make a request to agent to get the certificate enrolled. And of course, each service has to now enable HTTPS. But otherwise, there are no changes to application logic in general. So that's one good thing about this. Okay. So, are there any questions on certificate management, clinician management?
Looks like there's one in the chat on Istio.
Yeah, so this is Jason. I was just poking around. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Istio, but it has a CA service and a means of putting the keys into the different containers and all that. So I didn't know if you guys had looked at.
We looked at it. We looked at it very extensively. The slide talks about why we decided to. There are two reasons. One is Istio currently, tightly integrated with Kubernetes. But ONAP, my understanding is that ONAP service can be brought up not only using Kubernetes but also using other orchestration systems like OpenStack or any other things tomorrow. That's one reason. And second reason is that the Istio assumed that there is always a sidecar. So I think the intention of Istio is that without making no, I mean, with existing container with no changes to container images, they like to have secure communication. So essentially, what they did was that they put Envoy proxy in a sidecar, in a pod, and then they have clear communication between existing whatever service to that Envoy proxy, and from Envoy it makes HTTPS connection. So it's kind of there is a proxy for every container. Some people might say that it is good for if you're getting container images from third party and you don't have access to their source code to make any modifications, then it is fantastic. It is fantastic. But in case of ONAP, we really want to start the security communication straight from the application itself. And also we have access to, I mean, this ONAP is ours. So we felt that, you know, starting the security right from the application service is good rather than, you know, handing it over to some sidecar. And
Oh, I was just going to say, I know on the, you know, Kubernetes side of it, well, I mean, your own note said you've got it, you were going to use OOM to, you know, populate some of the keys in there. So you've got the same issue, but there is the option in Istio for bare metal, at least for the security side of it. So you might just re-examine that again. I know it's going undergoing a lot of changes recently, but you might just.
Okay. Who is speaking, by the way?
This is Jason Hunt.
Jason. Okay. Okay. I checked it a few weeks back, but and let me also check whether they are doing anything on this front. Yeah. Right, thank you. This is something which is the first thing which came across is service mesh technology. And Google is using it internally. And so we thought, I'll check again. But the CA software which we found also, it seems very basic. It doesn't have any ability to keep the private keys secure. Even the CA private key is not very secure. It is in the file. So there is no security there. So that's why we felt that, you know, Vault is kind of more mature than Istio at this time, and since we wanted to make it independent of Kubernetes in general, that's the reason we chose to go with Vault. But we will check once again, and then we before deciding which one to use, we'll check once again that Istio.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if we looked at it, we'd actually want to look at it for, you know, broader capability than just the security capability at some point. But,
That's the one thing. That's one more thing which we were thinking. If you look at MSP today, it is already has service registration, service brokering functionality. And if you look at Istio, it's mainly service registration, service discovery is main functionality. And additionally, they also have this sidecar for security. But we already have service registration, service discovery functionality today in MSP. Security portion, if you want, I mean, that's why I looked at the security portion of Istio. So, as I said, the main drawbacks I found is that one is it is very much integrated with the Kubernetes controller, and the second is some security features are not so good. But as I said, if you decide to use Istio and replace MSP, in which case it's good to work with Istio and then make it better for security also, instead of going ahead with entirely different security service. So based on that decision, we can make a call on security also.
Hi, Mr. Harik here. So later I will have a presentation about the MSP, Kubernetes, and the going forward planning. We'll also have some content about the social mesh and Istio. Maybe after we have that discussion, we can go back to see if we have, maybe we will have some more idea about this.
Okay, I didn't quite get everything. Yeah, but again, as I mentioned, that if you, as a architecture, if you make a decision to go with Istio kind of thing, then this need to be revisited, because we don't want to use Vault at that time. We rather we go ahead and then make modifications to their CA service and then make it more secure. But another issue with Istio today is that Jason, if they assume that there is only one service running in each container, but if you have multiple services or multiple TCP services running on a container, and if each service need to be having its own authentication, then that is a kind of an issue there. Today they assume that one container has got only one certificate, and that means they assume that there is only one service in each container. That's another issue which we find. So we need to there are some drawbacks, but I think they can be overcome. But the decision is to go with Istio kind of service mesh technology for ONAP. Then security also can be kind of, we can enhance the security portion of that that package. But keeping the current architecture in mind, we felt that this is the right thing to do. Okay. Moving on secret server, secret service. You know, today in the ONAP, the database, the passwords which are required to talk to some external entities or external services, not external, other services such as database, Kafka, log service, and VIMS, many more, right? They all use password-based authentication. And the passwords are basically stored in files today. So now we're talking about with many service and service instances, the attack surface of, password being stolen is quite big now. So there is a need for, avoiding password, sprawling files. We also need to avoid passing the passwords as environment variables to services. And certainly we need to avoid the passwords being stored in clear in files in storage. But having said that, secret server concept is nothing new. In the Kubernetes, there is a built-in secret server, and the OpenStack deployments use Barbican to store secrets. But in ONAP, we don't have that. So the proposal is to create one secret service in ONAP too. So these are some of the requirements. There should be ability to add secrets to the secret service and get the secret reference and pass the secret reference in the services. And services, when they require actual secret to talk to some database server, at the time it can get the secret from the secret service using that reference which it got before. And they use it and then destroy it immediately. So essentially, we are not having the secrets stored in files in containers using this mechanism. So the architecture-wise, it is similar to certificate credential service, but its functionality is different here. The secret service, and again, by default, we can use HashiCorp Vault for secret management also. But if somebody need to have their own secret service, they could add a plugin to this secret service software. And corresponding to service, you need to have an agent. Whichever service requires secrets to be stored there, they could use this agent to create secrets as well as get secrets. Again, we try to see what are the possible secret backends. Of course, this is a Kubernetes secret server, as I talked about. But the issue is that, again, it is very tightly integrated with Kubernetes. Since we intend to use multiple orchestrators for ONAP itself, we felt it is not a good candidate. And also, at this time, Kubernetes secret server is, the secrets are stored in tier. In files on the secret service side. So security-wise, it is not, they haven't thought about it much yet. And the Barbican is a good architecture. There's no doubt in that. But it's only used in OpenStack today. And the maturity and scalability is a concern at this time. And the community support is also limited. And Vault, is that the reason we chose is that it is a very good architecture and well supported, and it is widely used in multiple projects, and it also has got very good backends to securely keep the secrets they have something called quorum-based master key generation today. With the master key is normally used to encrypt the secrets, but it also has the ability to enhance using some hardware-based security. So that's the reason we felt that Vault is a good candidate. And Vault, as I said, it's also planning, we're also planning, also basically suggesting to use the certificate also. So one software is good enough for both secrets and certificate credentials.
Question?
Sure.
So if we use Kubernetes, then the CA for ONAP, we need to have a separate arrangement, correct? Because the CA is an operative admin domain, and who is going to keep track of the admin for ONAP?
I mean, we have a project called AAF, right? Authentication Authorization Framework, and and that is actually, my understanding is that it has its own username, password database, and I guess it also can communicate with NDAP servers if there is any enterprise user database. So the intention is that whether it is secret service or whether it is certificate credential management service, all user authentication would happen using AAF. So we also, like any other software pack, sorry, any other service in ONAP, talks to AAF to get the user authenticated. We intend to use the same mechanism from secret service as well as certificate credential service.
One more question. Maybe this is for security subcommittee. Traditionally, when you talk about TAP and CHAP, this goes back to MD5 and the weak secret keys and so on. So is there a way to really use a more secure environment for ONAP rather than the TAP and CHAP for AAF? Sorry, I have not been tracking this. Do we use only PAP CHAP, or we use like EAP with some more strong security mechanisms? You know, EAP, yeah.
I mean, from admin user perspective, I guess from browser to this web server, any web services, right? Username and password. Yeah, typically they tend to use, this MD5 or SHA-1 kind of.
Yeah, SHA-1, yeah.
I don't know whether there's any, maybe AAF people can comment on it, but at this time in the industry, that is most popular at this time.
Or SHA-128, yeah? That is the most secure one. So,
yeah.
For AAF, yeah. This is for a question for AAF. Chris and the team, do we have that security level for ONAP, like SHA-128, or we have just the MD5 at that level?
I don't know that the AAF team is on the call right now.
I can't answer that either.
I think we have to take that offline. Jason was talking about the system security architecture going down to the next level for the software architecture. I think that would be part of that question, making sure that we have a secure service across. Just one comment. I like your use of Vault here. We've been talking over the last couple of weeks about aligning around console, which is also HashiCorp, and there's really good integration between the console and Vault. So I think that that helps reinforce all the way around.
Yes. Yeah, Vault internally uses console by default. So both are from the same company. Yeah. Exactly. That's a good point, yeah.
Great.
So then next steps, basically, as Steve mentioned, we talked to Steve's security committee, and As Steve mentioned, there is a, of course, there is a need for you know, securing private keys as well as secrets. But only thing is that whether it should be a new project, or is it does it need to be part of some other project? But at this time, we are going ahead and creating a new project. As Steve mentioned, Steve and others like Alex also mentioned to present to this committee. And if everything's okay here, then we like to take it to TS.
I think the question for the architecture committee as well is a little bit: should we represent this as one of the common services in the directional architecture?
That's where I would put it. I think that it is something that we would make available to various projects and various components. So I think that it would make sense to put in that place. Just to make sure, you have had the conversation with the AAF team on this and the alignment with them, is that correct?
You know, I was not successful in communicating with them yet. I need to.
I would suggest before going to the TSC for approval to make sure that you have had that conversation, because this is going to come up again. Make sure that you do have a sync and understand how the projects fit together, and make sure that if there's overlap, that that's called out and explained why. But ideally, we'd find a way to get these projects to dovetail together.
Yeah, I'll communicate again, but I am having a little tough time in getting hold of them. I think because of R1 and followed by Thanksgiving holidays. But hopefully I'll get some response this week. Okay, I got it. But otherwise, that particular interaction with AAF is mainly to ensure whether it should be a separate project or whether it should be part of AAF, right? Otherwise, this requirement-wise, is it the kind of subcommittee think that it is needed for R2?
One question or issue for the cloud project. If you use any plugin on top of OpenStack, there is a gap. I haven't been lately following this. The OpenStack doesn't really give you the security at the user level. It would only give you the secret key or whatever credential is at the session level. Can someone comment on if that gap already exists? I recall from a couple of years back when I was focusing on this, that was a gap. And for ONAP, is that gap already exist? Are you aware of that?
Parvesh, can you repeat that? What is that gap in what you saw in OpenStack?
Today, if you want to access the infrastructure resources, you use the Keystone, for AAF, correct?
OpenStack has got Keystone, which is equivalent to our AAF in ONAP. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so the limitation in OpenStack is that the keys that are from the network to the user. It just creates a binding between the session, which could be shared by multiple users. So the key is not at a user level. For the Keystone, there was some discussion in OpenStack that probably is relevant to ONAP. How we address that? I haven't been tracking the AAF discussion for ONAP, but that there is a gap there. If you want to really secure, have a secure access to infrastructure resources.
Okay, I know that Keystone, for example, once a user logs into the Keystone, Keystone provides a token. And that token is used by other services to ensure that the user is indeed already authenticated.
It's not right. at the user level. It's not per user. It's per session.
I mean, yeah, okay. Token represents that user's login session. So when user makes API calls to other services like Nova and Neutron, they're expected to be passed with that token which the user got from Keystone before. And Nova and Neutron, just to ensure that that token is valid, they talk to Keystone to get it validated. Once the token is valid, then they proceed further. So, I am assuming that similar system would be provided by AAF. Again, I haven't looked at AAF myself.
Parviz, I think this is something to bring up with the AAF team. Perhaps not on this proposal. You know, speaking personally, I think that this brings some valuable functionality to the table. Before doing any official sign off, I really want to open this up to the community, the rest of the committee. What does everybody else think about the proposal that we heard today? Any comments?
Well, AT&T and Amdocs have been having some discussions on similar topics, and I think we'd like a chance to review it and perhaps weigh in.
Okay.
This is Phil.
Okay. What I'm hearing then is some interest. Please make sure these are posted, and then when you have your proposal together, please share that as well, because I think a lot of people are interested in the topic and would like to dive into the details.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, from the security subcommittee, we saw this fills a need that we've identified. It's quite clear, right? And then, of course, we need to see how it fits in with the architecture. And we've already raised the issue that was raised there as well in the relation with AAF.
Mm-hmm.
One key point, Chris, is in case if you have inter-domain interaction, in the case of like Orchestration Federation, the CA, the authority, is that the SP authority or the partner's CA, or whose CA is going to be effective and how?
Okay. So this CA, what we are talking about is internal to ONAP, right? As Steve mentioned, there are three types of credentials. One is for external API, OSS, and when they need to talk to ONAP, there is one credential required, and there is another credential required on the south side to talk to external controllers. Are beams and things like that. And the third is that among the ONAP services, whatever certificate is a requirement, that is what we are addressing here today, the third part, that is among the ONAP services. The first part, which is external API, the north side and south side of ONAP, those are kind of addressed already to some extent. But the only issue there is that passwords which are required for certain, or even private keys which are required for external communications, those are not secured well. That's why we are proposing the secret server, which can store those external credentials securely.
But if we go the route of domain controllers, right, we would want to establish a pattern that works for any kind of a microservice, whether it's managing an outside domain, a piece of internal domain or whatnot, right?
But it's not as simple, Alex, because on the external communication, there may already be statements about how this should work, right? And then we have to respect that because we have to...
No. I'm not saying... I'm talking about the proposal that we were discussing in previous meetings where we would take, kind of generalize the interfaces that microservices need to expose in order to get plugged into the backplane, right? And if that can include some sort of a security story, that would be very useful. I'm not talking about the sorts of things we would connect in from the outside through the external interfaces.
So, Alex, if you are, the service registration with MSP is a kind, little bit of independent of the security, right? So, that can happen independent of, today it's already happening with MSP. Now what is not happening today is, secure communication among the services. And that's what we are addressing in this project.
Yeah. So, MSP, there's one more. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say there's one more thing I wanted to raise. One request that I had from the security subcommittee is we need to draw up the flows and how this is used and what it means to the projects, and then we have a sort of a best practice page from a security point of view that I want to, when that's done, actually include in there, so then it's available for all of the projects to see what it means to them.
Great, thank you.
One more data point, Chris. You remember from OPNFP, we had this, I guess it's called Moon Project, the security framework.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can, Steve, we can have a look at the Moon Project in OPNFP and can probably leverage on whatever they did with their platform to secure their platform, okay?
Okay, let's bring that up offline. I think that I'd refer you to the security committee on that.
Okay.
So any final comments from the community? Otherwise, we talked about the tie to MSB, and that's going to be our next presentation. Any final thoughts before we move on? Okay. Thank you, Srini. Now I'd like to turn this over to Wabing.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Okay, let's start my screen sharing. Okay, so you see it now.
Yes, we see your screen.
Okay, thank you. So, actually, this is the MSB planning for the Beijing and the going forward to support the for the color grid on NAPNIC service architecture. So we get a guideline from ONAP TSC. We have this ONAP architecture principle. ONAP modules should be designed as microservices, which is service-based with clear concept function addressed by each service with node coupling. So to support this architecture principle, we need some kind of infrastructure to support the microservice architecture. In Amazon release, MSB provide those kind of infrastructure, including the following functionality, including the registration discovery services and the API gateway, also the Java SDK for the microservice development and point-to-point communication. So let's go to the next slide. First, let's look at the take a look at the overview of the Amazon release MSP architecture. So inside the MSP, we mainly have those components. The registry, which is storage for the service information. We are using console as the service registry. And MSP discovery, which provides the RESTful APIs for service discovery and registration. And also the service gateway, which includes the external gateway and the internal gateway. So for the internal gateway for the to expose the service inside on app to the ecosystem, also the internal applicator GUI, which can be used a lot for the internal service communication, and MS SDK, which are now currently the Java SDK for point-to-point communication. And if we look at the right side, MFD already integrated with OM and head template. This we support these two approach in Amazon release. So after the microservices, our NAP, like WebC, SO, and Elisotore have been deployed and spun up by OM or head template. The services and the point can be automatically registered to MSP discovery, and without the without needing to, you don't need to modify the service the application side to add this kind of registration code. So in the absent release, we in MSP we have a design principle. We want to provide a next service infrastructure for NAP in a transparent way, which means we want to low or minimal modification on the application side. For example, for some when for the registration with OM, we are using the Kubuntu MSP administrator, so which is has low logistic code needed in on the application side. So if we look at this diagram, we can see that all the service endpoint information has been added to the Kubernetes deployment configuration files as a notation, so we don't have to modify the service application code. First, OM will deploy start on app components, and then the Kubernetes MSP registrator watch the Kubernetes pod events and can get the information. The service endpoint information from the event and the register service endpoint into MSP.
One question, if you go back, sorry.
Okay. But, I have some problem in my side for a moment.
Now back one more.
Okay.
Yeah, here there was one called demo with heat template. Is that what? Okay, I understand. Sorry.
Okay, because there are low project for the heat template, we have
sure.
Demo,
okay. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I understand now that I say.
So the next one. For the internal service communication, if we use internal gateway, we also don't have to modify the service application code. Simply, the internal gateway can handle the communication details, including the service discovery, load balancing, the trade, etc. And the service, for example, the service adjust signal request to the internal gateway, and then the gateway will find the available service destination for the request, and load that request to the service destination. And the multiple internal gateway can be deployed as a cluster to share the workload. So that's the main principle for the MSP Amsterdam design. We want to be transparent. So to support the color grid on map, I think currently we have some gaps. This diagram shows the ideal version of the microservice structure to support a cargoed or map microservices. So on the top, this structure, ideally we can run at bare metal, on top of the bare metal, virtual machine, container, cloud, all the kind of structure. And on top of that, we have communication, like SQL message bus. We can have Kafka or a clean code like that. On top of that, we will have business logic and for rapid development of microservice, we can have some kind of ADF application development framework like for Java, Python, and Go, and other kind of language. On top of that, we will have our business logic. It can be deployed on a cluster for multiple instances. And between these services, we have some inter-service communication, RPC communication. We can have HTTP or gRPC or any kind of RPC protocol. All this service will be logistical service discovery and will be pulled to the internal service consumer where the API gateway. And on the right side, we should have orchestration for the ONAP's components itself, including the deployment, scaling, heading, update, change. I think which will already be done by ON most of them. And also we should have some kind of governance for the services, like the configure management, API management, the policy, security, like that. And also we need the monitoring for the services, like we need to collect metrics for the, if we want to monitor the performance, and we also need to the central logging and the distributed tracing for the distributed and request. So that is the ideal infrastructure for the ONAP microservices, but it's not the currently it's not a comprehensive right now. So we need some kind of enhancement. For example, we need to enhance the reliability and the security of the RPC between microservice. Currently, there is no consistent way to handle it. Maybe different projects have different approach and different language have different framework to do that, but there is no consistent way. So also we need some visibility of the microservice. We need the metric and distributed tracing. And we also need the manageability for the microservice, like the policy, API management, config management, and the performance. For example, we should have latency aware load balancing like that.
Okay, sir. Hey,
yeah.
One question, quick question. So the dependency of MSP microservices framework on the asynchronous message bus, is that a bottleneck? Like today, if you use DMAP for that, or you use an enhanced version of DMAP to make it future-proof?
Okay. So this diagram, you just want to show... Well, I want to show the functionality needed for the to support ONAP microservice architecture. I didn't map the functionality to some specific project. You can see here.
Yeah, you know, my question is more on the red arrows that you are showing. Well, this is for long term, yeah. Not necessarily R2,
Now, there is a performance bottleneck on those red arrows, yeah? That is the bottleneck, correct?
Sorry, I didn't get this. Can you repeat your question?
In terms of latency, there is a bound, upper bound for latency for ONAP as a carrier-grade service platform. We have to put some hard numbers there. Let's say, I don't know, a few milliseconds or hundreds of microseconds. So in your presentation today, are you going to talk about the dependency of MSP microservices architecture with the async message bus? Is that dependency captured? I can wait to hear from you.
Okay. Actually, there are no dependency between the MSP and the MSP bus. Yeah, no dependency.
Okay.
So, okay.
I have one question here. You know, today in the Amsterdam release, OOM is basically registering service with the MSP on behalf of services. I guess what you are proposing here is that the service itself should register with the MSP. That's where you put the agent in the service box. Why did you put agent box in service instead of service instance box? I would assume that each service instance would have agent to register with MSP, right?
So agent here is for the registration, for service registration for a specific service. We can have an agent which is transparently to the microservice application, like the Kubernetes MSP registrator, which is agent. And we can also have some code inside the microservice to register the service to MSP.
But if you're looking at the vision architecture perspective, don't you think that agent being in each service instance is a good thing? On a temporary basis, you could have agent outside of service instances, but eventually, don't you think agent should be part of each instance itself?
No, agent is not part of instance. If you look at this diagram, we have, for example, we have multiple instances, instance 1, 2, and agent is outside of instance. Yeah.
No, that's what you put it, but I'm just wondering whether the agent should. I think that it, my thought is that if the agent is inside the instance itself, so whenever instance comes up, it can register itself via agent to the service discovery, to MSP.
So agent, the agent is used for the service registration without the effect to the microservice instance itself. So just like I was saying, in Amsterdam Release 1, Kubernetes MSP registrator is one kind of this kind of agent. Actually, this diagram is just to reflect the ideally microservice infrastructure, and all bugs inside the diagram is just functionality, not mapped to a specific project. So that's why I didn't put the Kube to MSP here. Okay, let's go to the next one. So to address all these challenges, MSP plans to provide a sales match to enhance
or this like the reliability of and the security of RPC with the ability of Mac services and the manipulability of Mac services and the performance. So in case some of the your folk other folks don't allow just match before I add some brief introduction for just match. So currently in Amsterdam, before we introduce the just match, so if we have a Mac sales application here, we have some kind of business logic inside it. So to support the inter-service communication, we need secure the communication between the services. So we add TLS code related to TLS here. And we also need the add some retries to make sure the reliability of the service communication. Also, if we want to monitor the performance of the services, we need some instrument code for the matrix like that. So all this code directly go inside of the application code.
What do you mean by retries? Can you explain what do you mean by retries?
Okay. For example, if service A want to access service B, so it send a request to service B, but there might be multiple instances in our service B. So the first request sent to service B, but this instance has some problem. So this instance didn't respond. So the service A maybe should wait and wait for some time. After the timeout, it will retry and try another instance until this service A get the response from one available instance. That's the idea of retry. It's just kind of a reliable communication between the services. Okay.
But I thought in Amsterdam, we are using MSP and MSP for service discovery, and MSP is supposed to return the service instances that are actually up and running. Is it not?
Actually, MSP can return multiple instances for destination services, because some services may have multiple instances behind that.
Okay, I thought MSP uses console underneath. Console has ability to do health checks and only provide DNS responses with the service instances that are already up and running. So maybe.
Yeah, that's correct. Console may only return the health services instance. But when you check the service is available, maybe after it return back to you, it will have some problem. That's possible. You can't guarantee at any moment the service will be available. For the RPC, you can't guarantee that.
Okay. So yeah. You are saying that the service MSP may be returning at that time whatever instances are up and running, but by the time app container tries to make a connection to the destination service instance, it will not be there at that time. So, you have to go on to the client.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we can go back to this slide. So if we look at this slide, we now. Currently, we have two approaches for the inter-service communication. One approach is that, like here, okay, control, maybe.
One approach is that you can use MSP SDK, or you can directly write your own code to get the service from MSP Discover and send a request to the next server. So the service will itself be responsible for the inter-service communication, like the retry matrix, like that. Another approach is that you just send a request to the internal gateway, and the gateway will handle the details for you. Mm-hmm. And it will send a request to the available instance behind the MSP gateway. So if you are able to do this approach, internal gateway will handle the retry like that for you.
Bobbing, this is Roger. I believe that some of the component teams within ONAP are working on their own high availability clustering solutions, so that instance management would be a function of the components and not necessarily of the infrastructure.
Okay, I understand. Let me go over this other slide so we can get the whole idea. Okay. So if we put all this code, this code is a lot related to business logic. So we put all this code into another process. We call it proxy. The proxy will handle the inter-service communication for the microservice application. And that's the basic idea behind the service mesh. The separation of concerns. The remote communication logic is moved into the proxy and deployed as sidecar. And the developer only to take care of its own business logic. So before
the concern is that as I mentioned in my previous presentation, between app container to the proxy, the communication isn't clear. So that is typically one could say that it is in the same physical host, but still that is a concern. So I mean, whatever you are showing is what is followed by Istio also. They went with the approach of the sidecar. The reasoning they also given is that containers, app containers, do not need to worry about anything. And the second main reason I think is that app containers coming from some third party. Okay, you don't have access to their source code to add any functionality, and that's where they say sidecar is very useful. So is it not a concern that, TLS starting from a sidecar versus, TLS starting from app container itself, what do you guys think? I mean, I felt that, TLS starting directly from the app container is the right thing instead of TLS starting from the sidecar.
So your question is that we should start from the application container? What's your...
Yes, I mean, especially TLS. At least TLS, security perspective, app containers should have TLS endpoint instead of sidecar being the TLS endpoint.
So your concern is that the communication between application container and the proxy is clear? Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, get it. So actually, if we deploy this kind of approach inside Kubernetes, the application container and the proxy will be inside one pod. So actually, it's inside one network space. So the communication between application container and the proxy, we think it's secure already. So if we are using bare metal, maybe I think the and the virtual machine, I think the application container and Flux will be deployed inside one machine, one host.
I agree on that aspect. That is, assuming that we are going to go with the containers and Kubernetes, right? Then both proxy and the container on the same pod, that means both are in the same network namespace, it is okay. But again, I think the bigger question really is that are we going to standardize entire ONAP using Kubernetes and containers? And
I'm not saying we will only use Kubernetes. As I mentioned, I think ONAP itself should support all kinds of structure, including bare metal, virtual machine, Kubernetes, cloud, like that. Actually, the source match is not only based on container or Kubernetes. It can also be used in other kind of infrastructure.
Just a quick time check. We're at the top of the hour now. Are people okay staying for a few more minutes for Huabing to finish up his presentation?
Okay, maybe I can quickly go through this presentation. You guys have any comments or question, you can send me an email and we can discuss offline.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Thank you, guys. Okay, this is a definition of service mesh. A service mesh is a dedicated infrastructure layer for handling service-to-service communication. It's responsible for the reliable delivery of requests through the complex topology of the service that comprises a modern cloud relatable application. In practical, the service mesh is typically implemented as an array of lightweight network proxy that are deployed alongside application code without the application needing to be aware. So the good thing is that there is no need to modify the application because we know OLAP right now, OLAP is many projects, each project have its own idea, its own framework, its own language. So it's hard to, if we want to have some instrument code inside of them. So if we have some kind of approach which can be transparent to the application, it's very good. So MS plan for R2 and forward, we will plan to provide a source mesh to support calibrated Microsoft based ONAP to solve this address or all this calibrated requirement like the stability and reliability, security, from performance, observability, manageability, and testability. That's the architecture for the R2 and forward. So basically, we want to integrate with the ISTO control plan and also have some enhancement like we will plug the MEMS discovery and Kubernetes V to parrot and provide MS portal, which has service catalog and a struggle UI for all the deployed Mac services. And we will have MSB set a car to integrate with a control plan and MSB API gateway to expose the service to the external system. So by this approach, we can address all this S3P problem, S3P issue, concern of ONAP to support the CarGrid ONAP system. So that's my idea. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Huabing. Very interesting presentation. If anyone has any further comments for Huabing, please send them through email. And we did not get through the chat proposal We talked about CHAP on a few calls. Bharath has a proposal for the December 12th meeting. He agreed to circulate that through email. So please give comments through email, and we can review it on next week's call.
So, Chris, just one quick question. Yes. Is there any specific mailing list that I need to use? I'm sorry, I haven't sent a mail to the entire group before.
ONAP-ARC.
Okay, thank you. I'll take care of it.
Great. Thank you. So look for that, and please provide feedback so that he can address it in his proposal, and then we can do a review as the architecture committee next week. Thank you, everybody. Very good discussion today. I will post the recording later today after it finishes the post-processing. And look for email from me. Let's continue the work through email, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.